Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End. On Sunday morning, we record this after Watford 0, Preston North End 0. And I do enjoy saying Preston North End, not just Preston, but I do love a West Bromwich Albion. I do like saying a longer football name and saying it correctly and precisely. And I think we'll talk about why they deserve their full and slightly gentlemanly name of Preston North End a bit later on. But as always, we come here every week to discuss what happened on the pitch for Watford this week. I'm joined, my name's John, by the way. I'm joined, as I normally am, by Jason.
Morning. I know a Preston North End fan. He's not very gentlemanly, but he won't be listening to this, so I can say that.
And Mike.
There's something very classified results about the way you did that score, John. Watford 0, Preston North End 0. John Alexander.
Yeah. No, I had the lovely, he was a lovely man. I worked with the BBC for like a couple of years and stuff. And he would always do this thing where he'd do the scores, but there was always a late game. So like halfway through the second half, he'd be in his studio and I'd have to record it where I was in this little desk area. And he would do all the possible scores for the last game. So yesterday it was Brighton against Arsenal. So he'd do all the different things. And then right at the end, he would do 7, 8, 9, because you have to go up. Because if you get 7, 8, 9, that's going to be a massive win. So he'd have to, just in case we need to edit it in because of the crazy last game. But somewhere there must be all these recordings of fake scores that Jag did. But let's talk about Watford's game yesterday. There were many, many words used on discussions I had in the pub afterwards with Ollie Wicken and Stu Hutchinson and on our WhatsApp group. I made a list of them. Was that game diabolical? Was it frustrating? Was it terrible? Was it annoying? Was it championshipy? Jason, I don't think I could call it diabolical. Mike, that was a one from Mike, I think it was, during the game. And as we know, he probably didn't need
to explain that.
No, but he'd be very, very pessimistic. And I think for me, if it was going to be a diabolical game, we would probably be 2 to 3 goals down and not even getting the ball anywhere near a chance. Was it frustrating for you, Jason?
I suppose a little bit, yeah. I think championshipy was my one, was it? Wasn't it? It was your typical end of season, teams not going up, teams not going down. Although Preston probably were slim of a slight sniff, but probably would have needed to have won yesterday. But it looked to me like they were just coming for a draw. As soon as they lost the ball, they would drop back, sit deep, get their shape. We were struggling to break them down. When they did try and attack, they lacked the quality that we also seem to lack. It was just frustrating is right. I think there were potentially opportunities there for us that I thought we didn't take. When we were attacking, there were gaps that their fullbacks were defending quite wide, and it did look like there were gaps to exploit between centre backs and fullbacks. And our forward players were a bit slow off the mark. Every time we did try to play the ball into those channels, particularly Dennis, was always second to it. His mark always had the run on him. And that was probably the biggest aspect that I found most frustrating during the game.
Yeah, I always think frustrating game is one, Mike, where you're knocking on the door, you're going to get there, you should be scoring goals, but you're not. And I don't think we were quite going to score a goal, but we were causing opportunities, I suppose. But it was a little bit of synchronization that wasn't there for the performance. Like you said, Dennis was a bit slow, but also he wasn't ready for those balls through. They weren't all quite together as a...
Yeah, no, he was slow off the mark. I've got another one. Tranquil. Because I thought that Watford's running is going to be quite good because we've got a little clutch of games against teams who have got something to play for. One way or the other. We've had Birmingham at the start of Tom Cleverley's rack. Can you call it a rain after 4 games? I'm going to call it a rain.
Okay. In Watford terms, it's a rain.
yeah. It's nearly testimonial territory, isn't it?
But you can be a king or queen and you can have a reign of days.
Yeah.
So I think you can do it. Like era is the word people keep using. I think era needs to be longer.
A bit longer.
Yeah, but I think it can be a rain, yeah.
Brought to your ears by From the Rookery End. This is Football Cliches. The adjudication panel has judged. So anyway, we've had we had Birmingham, where they've got something to play for in terms of relegation scrap and the rest. And then we've got this little clutch of teams who are in at the playoffs. And I think you were a bit dismissive there, lads, of Preston's chances of getting into the playoffs. Yes, they're on the sort of outside of that chasing pack, but they're still in with a shout. Absolutely packed away end, sunny day. I thought this is going to be, you know, Preston are going to go all guns blazing for this because they, like you said, their season was on it, really.
But they weren't all guns blazing.
No, I thought the exact opposite. Yeah. I found it utterly, utterly bewildering, the Preston's approach. Point absolutely no good to them. How and why they were so just relaxed about the whole thing, even towards the end, right at the very end, where the goalie had it with seconds to go. He stood there with it. He falls on it. Instead of kitchen sinking it and trying to win and keep those playoff hopes alive, it was very, very bizarre from Preston. I think their supporters, the various Preston podcasts and fanzines and whatever this morning, will be scratching their heads, I think, as to their performance. Even if you've got an outside chance, you've got to go for it. And
well, at the beginning of the day, at the very beginning of the day, 5 points off at the beginning of the day.
Yeah.
But now they're seven.
Yeah.
And actually they were eight before the game started because of that Norwich result.
Yeah.
So if they'd seen that result, maybe that had made them go,
even more though. I mean, what's the point? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You absolutely go for it and you it's not as if, and I saw a few interviews with Preston fans picked up on this, Ryan Lowe, the Preston boss, saying Watford are in great form and all this sort of stuff. really, mate. We haven't won at home since I had hair. So it's you're not exactly coming to a fortress about team high on their.
Yeah, but they look at things differently, don't they? They look at the fact that we got a draw and pushed Leeds and West Brom. They do look at football a little bit.
I kind of know what you're saying, but. Astonished by Preston's approach, and you know we weren't able to do much either. And the reason I say tranquil was it felt like a draw from almost the get go.
It felt like a draw in the pub beforehand because I was in the railway, and it was I always see Dave in the railway, and he's oh how are you feeling about today? And I said fine, I'm absolutely fine. I'm not going there excited. I'm not going there dreading it either. And I think that does come from some, you know, not amazing performance, but better performances in the last couple of games and getting results of teams that we wouldn't expect to. And it was like, I'm enjoying the meeting of people in the pub beforehand and seeing everyone at the game and all that sort of stuff. That's what I was looking forward to.
Yeah, that feeling, John, I think is probably the perfect comment on the season. I think everyone is kind of just, right, We're not going to get relegated now. We're certainly not, I don't think, after yesterday's result, bar an absolute freak set of results. And I think everyone's kind of just waiting for the good weather, which is that's about what all anyone can say about the season. I think we know there's players there that aren't going to be there next season. We know there's going to be a changing of the guard, I think, in terms of the playing staff in the summer again. And we're just kind of treading water a little bit and turning up just kind of just to see if we can see what Tom can do. I think that's perhaps I'm being a little bit uncharitable. I think Tom Cleverley has brought a new sort of sense of hope and anticipation amongst us as supporters. And quite rightly so, I think a win and three draws against three teams who are at the right end of the table, a win that was very, very important for us, I think is good. And I think we have played some nice stuff, particularly against Leeds and West Bromwich Albion. I think yesterday was more, we seemed to go a little bit, and this is why I said what I said about us playing, looking forward to playing teams with something to play for. I feel like we're better against those guys when it's a bit more open, the game's a bit more frenetic, because yesterday we sort of reverted to type a little bit. Definitely more on the front foot, as has been Tom Cleverley's want, than we were under Valerian Ismail. I was talking to someone yesterday who was explaining how utterly beholden Valerian Ismail was to stats and data, and everything was done reliant on numbers, X's and O's, whereas Tom seems to be a much more eye test, sort of live it, breathe it type thing on top of the analyst. Analysis as well. But yesterday I felt like we were unable to really break down a team who weren't that interested in playing themselves, and that probably exposed our probably our lack of real creativity and sort of the standout talents. It just, we just weren't able to get them going and into the game because it just wasn't that ebb and flow. There wasn't the space opening up. There wasn't the pace and the tempo for us to exploit. I don't think Watford played particularly well themselves. I think the individuals that we need to do well and the areas which we have seen do well in the under Tom Cleverley, flourish under Tom Cleverley, didn't really get going yesterday. And it's sort of, we might as well. I enjoyed the day, don't get me wrong, but everyone might as well have not bothered, really. It's one of those, wasn't it?
Jason, you know, those creative players, there was two that, well, who comes to mind for you? I think of Espria and Chatfatatse. They didn't turn up. They weren't quite on their game. They were tired because it's the end of the season, or?
I didn't think Espria was quite in the game as much as I would like to have been. There were sort of brief flickers from him where he sort of received the ball, fainted one way, go the other way. But then other players in the midfield were doing that as well, and seemed to be just as capable and perhaps contributing more to the game than Espria did. Chatfatadze did okay when he came on. What I particularly liked about him was his passing to Lewis was better in terms of we kept the momentum going in terms of he was playing passes in front of Lewis to run onto. I think everything else Lewis had received up to that point was behind him and he was having to check back. To be honest, I don't think Lewis needs an excuse to check back because he seems to be quite capable of doing that himself. We wanted to get him forward and running at defenders and getting crosses in. It wasn't until Georgie came on that it felt like we were doing that with Lewis down the left-hand side. So I think he bought a little bit more. Generally, in terms of creativity, I thought most of it came from sort of that central midfield pairing of Dele Bashiru and Kayembe. I love what they do where they both seem to sort of, but I said about Espria, he did it a few times, where they sort of feint to go one way, sell the marker, let the ball run across them, and then they're sort of running and sort of taking that momentum and sort of running at players with the ball. Dele Bashiru does it really well, I think. As I mentioned to you guys on the WhatsApp group, I think Kayembe approaches it slightly differently in that he sticks his arse out and seems to sort of roll his marker more in a sort of Ken Sema tribute act kind of way. But again, does it well. He uses his strength to sort of hold off the marker and then sort of come away with the ball.
Wasn't his greatest game, Jace, yesterday, was it?
No. I think from those two, we've seen some good performances recently, perhaps not as good yesterday. And again, that probably comes down to the lack of space, Preston sort of sitting back quickly and sort of making it difficult, sort of packing out the midfield, making it harder for them. But still, it felt like that's where it was coming from. When we were actually probing and sort of able to get forward, it felt like it was those players the ball was going through. And some of the patient stuff as well, I thought worked quite well, where we would sort of go one way, stop, go the other way. And again, we were sort of slowly progressing up the field playing that. And when we executed it right, it looked pretty good. I know people like to get the ball forward quickly, but when we were doing it this way and got it right, it looked good. But there wasn't enough of it, was there? It just, there too many times we tried it and a stray pass, which again, both teams were guilty of in abundance yesterday. And it just made it all a bit messy.
I think Tom, the emergence of Tom Dele Bashiru is fast becoming one of the highlights for me. I liked the way he slotted in at right back because I think he did there what Jason has just spoken about there. He enabled us to sort of in a time where we were really, really struggling to transition in from defence into attack. At least what he does is gets his foot on the ball, looks up, is confident and strong enough to take his time and look to play a measured pass. And now he's doing that in midfield. I really think he's going from strength to strength in terms of him knowing his role and knowing his role and understand. Little nod to WrestleMania weekend there, yeah. The absolute nerds out there. Yeah, he just looks like he's growing in confidence and he's growing in strength, and he kind of bosses that midfield, doesn't he? Because I think Kayembe can be a bit hit or miss sometimes. His control can be a little bit difficult. I think I rather unkindly likened him to a runaway bin lorry yesterday during the game because he just barrels around the place, doesn't he? I mean, it's absolutely fabulous when he's got the ball because people just bounce off him. But when he's sort of chasing the ball, he can look like he's sort of one of those films when they're coming down a runaway tram coming down one of those San Francisco hills. He's a bit like that. And, you know, I love that. I love a little bit of that chaos and a little bit of that sort of strength. And it's just seeing us being on the front foot, even if we are vaguely out of control. So yeah, I think that they can we get another season out of Ed Okeyemba? You'd hope so. But I think those two are going to be key next year. But I think the emergence of Tom Dele Bashir is actually, you know, we were quite scathing about him at the start. I know we had a chat with Colin John, didn't we, on the pod early on when we were talking about discipline and issues that Valerian Ismail was having to sort out. And Tom Dele's name was one that came up. But he's among the first clutch of names on the team sheet at the moment, I think.
And what's been great about him this season, and he will be part of the conversation for player of the season, I think, when we do it in a week or two, because of just purely, that first goal of the season, he started very well. But the fact that he has played the roles he's been given, he's always played his best in those positions. And when given a run, he's played himself into a position where you go, well, you probably still aren't my first choice, but actually, you really made me not be, you know, as a fan, when you see the team come out, not a worry. But this role he's playing now is more in his wheelhouse. And in fact, I think, you know, if Tom Cleverley is your manager, the players who should improve should be those central central midfielders, because he'd go, well, lads, this is the way you want to do it. And really, really, I suppose I'm proud in many ways of Tom Dele Bashir this year, just from that attitude. And, you know, he did have something. He wasn't quite as professional as Val wanted, but he is completely gone, right, fine, yes, learn, I'm here to do something. And I think that was great. Yeah, any other standouts for you in the team, Jason, maybe outside of the midfield?
Obviously we had a first clean sheet at home since November, the Rotherham game, I think, so I suppose you need to give a little bit of a hat tip to the defenders, but in all honesty, bowl hat tip, very good. They did ride their luck a couple of times. There were a couple of great chances that Preston really should have scored. So they did get away with it a bit. I thought, I don't know.
But in terms of attitude?
In terms of attitude, Wes seemed to have the red mist all game.
Yeah, he did.
He had the right arse. Yeah. I was worried he was a walking red card. I thought he was going to do something stupid.
He was on the wind-up, wasn't he?
Yeah, just
Reece he was having a battle with. He sort of, even when the ball was in, we had the ball in their area, and sort of you've got one centre back and the striker back. He's putting his arm out and trying and pushing him around, and I kind of get that. You've got to, it made trouble probably trying to spark something into life, because as I said, the game was very, very flat from both sides, and whether it's a little bit of, oh, I'm just a bit bored here, I'm just going to wind him up. But yeah, you're right. There was something a little bit off about Wes yesterday, Jace. I think you're right. I think some of his early passing wasn't hitting the mark.
There wasn't one point at all where he didn't do a long pass. I can't remember one long pass from one side to the other. So that's like clearly being said, no, stop that.
Well, I don't know about that. I just don't think that. I don't think they were able to open up the opportunities to do it. But there was he did have a shot, and it went it went quite comfortably wide, but I was right behind it, and his sort of technique is unbelievable, really. His backlift is non-existent, and it's a very languid approach to the ball, but he absolutely fizzed it. It was like a fastball in baseball, just straight as a die. It had a little dip at the end. What's that? A knuckleball, but his technique for striking the ball is quite extraordinary, and it took the keeper by surprise. I think if he was on target, it would have gone in, despite being, 35 yards out? But yeah, I noticed that as well, Jace. Very, a bit of a curate's egg from Wes yesterday. I wonder whether he's feeling his way back in after, obviously, he's had two games out. But yeah, the funny little wind-up stuff. I mean, I quite enjoy watching it. I prefer our players were doing it than ours getting wound up by the opposition all the time. We've seen it far too many times. I thought, just a question for you guys. I thought, we know that Jamal Lewis doesn't like defending, and I think you've covered him perfectly, Jace, in terms of he got unlocked when Chakvetadze came on. Chakvetadze's movement is I just find it much more enjoyable, engaging. It looks much more difficult to deal with as an opposition defender or midfield. He does that jinking, sort of slightly low centre of gravity. I presume most of the opposition think, well, he's not going to be any good. He's playing in his school shoes. but when he comes on, he's incredibly skillful. He's got one thing on his mind: get forward. He can beat a man. He doesn't beat a man with with tricks or whatever. It's just the way he uses the ball and the shape of his body, and I think it's really great. And you're 100% right, Jace. I thought Jamal Lewis looked better. We used him better and got him into better spaces and zones when he came on. Although his delivery, I thought, was poor all game. He had a really good chance in the first half. He took it with his right foot. It's probably one of the better moves from Watford. He took it with his right foot, and he just had time to readjust his body and take it with his left. And we know his right foot's about as useful as Ken Semmers. We ought to have some sort of competition in the training ground. Like, neither of you can go home until you sort of hit a decent pass or a shot with your right foot.
Or barn door.
And I thought that kind of summed up Jamal Lewis's performance. I think he's one that I think Watford players are going to be, we've had enough now. It didn't really work out. Probably not Jamal Lewis's fault. I don't think we played to his strengths throughout the season. We saw glimpses of what he could be, but a defender that doesn't really want to defend, it's not for me. But to be positive, I thought we got him into the game much better when Chakvetadze came on. And I think there's a massive shout for Georgie to be to get a starting berth on the back of that performance. I think he's probably been rested after his efforts away with Georgia. Great. I thought a really, really nice touch from the club to recognise that. That's a huge accomplishment for Georgie Chakvetadze and the nation as a whole. So to recognise his role in that, I think was a lovely touch. But on the other side, I thought, and controversial, I know he's been a sort of divisive figure over the last couple of months, but I thought Ryan Andrews really struggled again.
Mm. It's that new position for him in some ways. You know, we all thought, he had a terrible, not terrible game, but he had a hard, hard game against Leeds with Somerville, Jason. And I suppose, you know, we were speaking last week and you'd expect this 3-5-2 to be a great thing for him to do what we love best. To drive forward, to be, you know, attacking and not have to worry as much about his defensive work. But I don't know, it felt a little bit like he was getting a little bit frustrated.
You could see that. There was one point where we had a good break on and he sort of popped up on the right-hand side, didn't he? I think he had Lewis running to his left and he just took a heavy touch, didn't he? Heavy touch on the ball and lost the ball, fouled his man or injured the player just in the challenge that followed and we lost the ball. And his reaction to that was one of frustration, wasn't it? He sort of looked up to the skies and just was like, oh, almost, what am I doing? Because he knows he's better. He's a better player than that. But he's still young. I think that we need to remember that. What is he, 19, 20 still? I can't remember off the top of my head.
Younger than us, Jason. He's a lot younger than us.
That's a long time ago for me.
I think we saw where he's at.
Yeah, and he's gonna get better, and he's gonna develop. He is still developing. He'll have moments like this. He just needs to, he's got the opportunity because of Ngakia's injury, and it's the end of season, and nothing's going to happen. We're not going up. We're not going down, like you say. So it's almost a sort of free rein to just sort of play his game, focus on what he can do and what he can bring to the team. And just sort of sell himself feels like the wrong word to use, but just show us what he can do without too much pressure on him. So I think if he doesn't worry about it too much, you know, just gets on with it, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. And we know there's a player there. He will get better.
He did cut a frustrated figure. You're right, chaps. And I think he felt like he got fouled a little bit on a couple of times. He was sort of looking to the ref for a little bit of support. And I found that actually the refereeing quite interesting over the past couple of weeks. I don't know whether you guys have sensed this as well, but it feels to me like refs, it's almost like there's been an instruction for there to be fewer yellow cards. I think which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I find it increasingly frustrating the way that players are, certainly at the top flight, what seems to warrant a yellow card seems to be, you know, the threshold seems to be very, very low. But I thought Leeds at home, there was not a single yellow card in the game. There wasn't a yellow card yesterday until the 52nd minute when Yasser got yellow carded. He had the guy's shirt. He's never going to get away with that. And then there were another two very, very late yellow cards, one for them and one for us. But I felt there were moments in the game. There was one where Watford were breaking through the middle and the guy just, both hands just pushed. I can't remember which Watford player it was.
Was that Andrews? I think you said Andrews got fouled a couple of times. And there were two on him that, you one wasn't even given and looked like a yellow, and one that was that probably should have been a yellow. Yeah. When the guy, the one on Andrews, I think, where he sort of pushed him over, and he didn't need to either because the guy was quicker than Andrews,
a lot quicker. Which is really
just
quick.
Seemed like a stupid thing to do if you're a Preston fan. What are you giving that away for?
Yeah.
And then there was one where the guy's again gone through the back of Andrews, and nothing's been given, and he's not even given the foul. That was poor. I thought you mentioned Lee's not going back to it too much. I thought, and I know a lot of fans gave the ref a bit of stick. I thought he was pretty decent on mm-hmm. Friday, to be honest, the Leeds game.
I agree.
It was niggly. You know, Leeds that were moaning about Somerville and the attention he got. Wasn't a game that seemed to warrant a lot of yellow cards, to be honest.
That's fair.
Yesterday did feel a bit, like you say, double standards at times where yellow cards could have been given in the first half. Same things happening in the second half, and all of a sudden the cards are coming out.
Mike did say, and you did say this before it started happening, Michael, you did say, I've noticed this thing about yellow cards. And it's like, it did come to fruition. And it was quite, a nice comment.
I'm not sure I said it quietly. Is that how you read my text messages, John, in your head?
No, that's Mystic Mike. He's thinking about the future.
Mystic Mike sounds like a right idiot. I mean, so does normal Mike, in fairness. So.
I just noticed, actually, this week is a year since Andrews made his full debut.
Yeah.
Against Coventry, I think it was the 10th of April. So he's coming up for a year as a professional footballer. And I suppose that is a good thing.
First team footballer.
First team footballer, yeah. But that's great that he has, I don't know, he has had a good year.
He just has to learn from, he had a torrid against Leeds, but anyone is going to against Somerville. One of the, if not the best player in the division, he's just really, really very good. Yeah. And I think as a footballer, to develop and to learn, especially as a defender wanting to learn your craft, coming up against the best is a really good way of learning, because you understand how they were just talked about how Chakvetadze beats a man. Well, as a right back, you're going to understand that, and you'd see how different players use their skills and attributes in different ways. And I think as long as he learns, which I don't think there's any question he will, and hopefully Watford is the place he's able to do that. And I think him being exposed to these tough games is going to be good for him, because he's, as a defender, you are going to have bad games. It just happens. You're not going to be on top in every single game. It's going to be really, really interesting to watch him. And I think his is a good case study as to the reaction of a football supporter. I remember, I'm guilty of it, earlier in the season, when I spoke earlier about how there's going to be a changing of the guard a bit in this Watford squad, player's going to be sold. I was like, well, he's going to go. He's amazing. He's really good. And I got carried away with it, because ultimately, because he's one of our own and he's really quick. That's what ultimately had caught my eye. And I was like, well, he's amazing. He's going to go. And as we've seen over the last couple of months, he's by no means the finished article, which he will admit himself. And it, as you rightly point out, John, he's had a year of first team football and not playing week in, week out, but certainly. And he's at the right at the start of his career. And I think we can all still be excited that he's hopefully a large portion of his career is going to be in the yellow shirt of Watford.
Jason, let's wrap it up, I suppose. If you looked at that starting 11, we've sort of talked about Chakvetadze should be coming in, missing Ken Semmer a little bit. Was that for this new 3-5-2 thing that Tom's been doing with his gang? Was that the best 11, do you think, for it? Or would you? What other things could we have done? Maybe more towards as an overall attitude at the beginning of the game. But how could you have improved it? Because there are certain players who are missing out. Jake Livermore has, imposed himself for a large part of the season, but it doesn't feel like a position or a system that would help in, or it would benefit him as a starting player. Who else is missing out?
I think you're absolutely right. I was going to start with Jake Livermore and say, like 6 weeks ago, you'd have said, we're not going to play Jake Livermore. You'd go, yeah, really? Because he's been one of the most sort of influential players on the team. But you're right. I think in that system, it doesn't suit him as much. And to be honest, I don't think we're really missing him from that point of view, are we? With the performances that we're getting from KMB and Deli Bashiru in the middle, I think they're perfectly capable. You mentioned Ken Semmer as well. He probably would be the one change I would make when he's fit. I would put him, we've talked about Lewis already, I think I'd get him back in there. I think that role would suit him to a T. I think we'd get great joy from him down the left, as we've seen in the past. We know his assist numbers have been good for us in the past, and that's exactly what we want from our sort of left midfielder, defensive midfielder, wing back, whatever you want to call them, from that sort of lineup. And we know he can do the defensive duties as well. We know he's perfectly capable. He's filled in before and done a good job. So I'd be more than happy to have Ken Semmer in the team. The rest, I think I'd probably leave as it is. Maybe talking about Andrews, when Ngaki's fit, would you give him a run back in the side just to see, just to make that a bit more competitive, push each other? Maybe. I think they could both be on a par in terms of performances, a bit up and down. Let's play them off against each other and see who would be the best. Yeah. Up front, I probably wouldn't change it, which is, we don't always get the best out of these guys. Bayo, we're probably seeing the best out of him that we have done. Dennis, we've spoken about already. It's hot and cold. Once he does his thing, he's happy and off he'll go. And it's more a slight on the recruitment than anything else that probably was our best attacking lineup.
Mm. I did enjoy when Vajovic came on, because I didn't watch the West Brom game. I was listening to it. And there was a moment near the end of the game, that West Brom game, where there was a free kick. And from what the commentary team was saying, Vajovic looked really put out that he wasn't taking the free kick and Martins took the free kick. And you're going, really? Why?
Yeah.
Well, this week he got his chance and you're thinking, oh, okay. Well, we've seen the throw-in and it didn't quite go off. And we need to see that throw-in a little bit more. Now we've seen, oh, there's a free kick in him. Maybe we need to see a few more free kicks, because one free kick's, you know, not going to get you up to, get your Ryan, is it?
It weren't bad. It was better than Raheem Sterling's the other week, so we'll give him that. There you go. Mitrovic is better than Raheem Sterling.
Chelsea fans will probably swap. I think we've seen a bit of a shift in approach from Raheem. I think him being benched has meant that when he comes on, he's a little bit more, all right, he's going to drop your number nine. I'm going to show I'm going to put myself around a bit. And I think that's potentially something that's been missing a little bit. I think there's never been any doubt with Raheem. Well, I don't know. He's not the finished article, but he's going to end the season with 11, 12 goals, which for a striker is fine. It's not 20 goals rip the league up, but you're not really going to worry about necessarily putting that on your CV. Your first season it's not technically a higher level, because he's gone from the top flight in Sweden to the second division in England, but I think in terms of, I think over there is a clutch of sides who are very, very good, and then the rest of much of a muchness. So I think it is a step up in quality for him, and for him to register whatever it's going to be, he's going to be fine with that. And I think Watford probably should be too, knowing what they were getting, because they must have scouted him and they must have seen the way he plays and extrapolated how he was going to play against Championship defences. Well, you'd hope so anyway. I mean, as just mentioned the recruitment there. There is obviously a question mark over that. But I think we've seen him sort of put himself about a little bit, ultimately, is the bottom line. And I really like that. We've seen a little bit of venom come into his game. And I think perhaps John taking that free kick is an indicator of that. And I think as a head coach in Tom Cleverley, you're loving that.
Yeah, and he did have a little bit of a back heel at one point, which kept the move going, and we had a chance off the back of it. He's like, you know, all these little things are coming out every so slowly with
you
Rive.
Want to see that? You want to see
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think he might be one that gets sold, because if he ends the season on 13, 14 goals, that will catch the eye. And I think Watford will be looking to bring money in one way or another. So he could be, amazingly, that's doing him a massive disservice. But he could be one that catches the eye of other clubs.
You could easily triple your money on him, easily. Yeah. And any club seeing him might be able to say, look, we can see what you've seen, and we know that we've got the people. Because he's not going to, because Tony, at Watford, he came in, your new number nine. And it was a big up for it. But he should never have been the first choice. And yeah, going back, I think I said before, reminded me, and he was there yesterday with Danny Graham. You know, when Danny came in, he had a great little start to the season, said Raevich. And what he was then surrounded by in that first year and with Malky was Heide Helgeson and Tommy Smith. And he had a little bit of support for that first year to develop him, to show him how to do things and to you know, refine him as a player. So his second year, he rocked and rolled and he scored, you know, a bucket load of goals. Yeah. So that for me, that you know, looking at that Rajovic in that way, he lacks that support and he lacks quality around him really that would help develop him in his position. I think that's where he fell over. He fell over.
How many times have we got that ball into the Rajovic danger zone? The delivery into the area has been poor, whether it's aerially, whether it's along the ground. Our final balls have been pretty bad all season. It's been a bugbear of mine all year, that quality in the final third. And if you've got a big striker who comes alive inside on the edge of the 6-yard box, if that's his zone, get it to him there. And in fairness to Rajovic, we just haven't done that. I mean, in fairness to anyone that plays up front for Watford, we just haven't really given them much service. So pleased to see that sort of little spark from him. I think Bio has reacted well as well. I think he's, you know, there was that time he effectively got booed off last season when he was taking too long to come off. And everyone was very, very dismissive of Vakoum Bio. And again, he's one whose quality has got an obvious ceiling, but what you at least make the best of what you've got, at least make the best of your abilities and attributes. And I think at least we're seeing a bit of zip and vim and vigour from Vakoum Baye. He looks like he's wanting to play for the side, and he's never going to be a 20 goal a year striker. It just isn't going to happen, but at least he's sort of getting stuck in, which it's a low bar, isn't it? And I thought, you know, to finish off the sort of attacking, I did quickly just mention Yasser Spree. I didn't think he had a great game. I think he's sort of drifting a little bit as the season goes on. Whether he's sort of got one eye on the summer, I don't know. We all know what Yasser's capable of. Are we seeing it on a regular enough basis? Are the players around him good enough to get that out of him? Just don't know. I think we all know that's going to be one to watch over the summer. It'd be nice to see him come to life. If Chak Vatadze does come in, I suspect it would be for him, maybe, in coming games. Obvious talent, getting the ball around the edge of the area. He's looking to shift it, so just put it out of his feet so he can get a shot off. Didn't happen yesterday because Preston were sort of flooding that area and there just wasn't the space. So not his greatest game. And again, and likewise, I just thought Emmanuel Dennis was...
Emmanuel Dennis.
Yeah, just didn't think he was great. I think he had too much license to be in positions where effectively he's looking for the ball when all he needs to be is being ready for the ball. There was a couple of opportunities when I think it was Ryan Andrews won a really, really good flick on. You know, it was a really athletic, he had to work hard to win the ball with the header and get it into the centre. And Emmanuel Dennis is sort of in a midfield role, sort of loitering around there instead of being where he should want to be, which is in the centre, sniffing around to score goals. And I'm going to say it, I'm just looking forward to him not being around. I just think he's a distraction. I think we're better with him in the side because I think that two up top is good, is better. It's sort of it's the most exciting we've seen Watford for most of this season, which again is a very, very low bar. But it's kind of like when you know you're not going to be here this year, you haven't really got the pace that you once had. I think that much is clear. He hasn't. I think the one thing that I hoped was that he was going to be too much for Championship defences. But I think most Championship defences are not. This isn't a being down on Emmanuel Dennis. Most defences have dealt with him pretty comfortably, I'd say. So we haven't seen that sort of explosion from him. And I just thought yesterday he lacked a bit of discipline in terms of where he needs to be on the pitch, and if we're going to unlock a sort of, I think a stubborn defence is the right word, but a team playing in a sort of quite deep way, you're going to need to be in the right places. It may well be that Tom's just told him to go out, go wherever you want the ball, pick it up where you want, make something happen. It may well be that was the approach, but I just felt too often yesterday he was found in positions where he can't hurt the opposition when we got into good areas. I thought that was a shame, and I felt a little bit Yeah, felt disappointed by that.
Yeah, and I'm disappointed in you, Michael, because you've jinxed it. Because I now think that there'll be a... I just hear in my head the Sky Sports theme, the swoosh of a breaking news, and the news that Watford have re-signed Emmanuel Dennis coming very early on a quiet day in the summer when Sky Sports don't have any Euros, but who knows. I think the only other one I want to mention before we move on is Sir Alter. I think he worked hard, and I'm not saying it was perfect, but he... Again, and similar, we were saying about Tom Dedibashiru, someone who has come in, come out, and when he knows his opportunity, there's a player there who's working hard, trying to make a difference. And I think he did that on a couple of occasions. But as you said, there were too many occasions where Preston should have seen us off, really, and had a few chances that they didn't put away.
Sir Alter doesn't want the ball too much. And I think if we play Sir Alter as a centre-back, as a classic centre-back, I think we've seen a little bit more of the Sir Alter we knew and love before in the last couple of games. I think you don't want him on the ball too much. You don't want him.
And he was playing as that in the middle of the three, wasn't he, yesterday? Yeah. I think so. And that probably suits him best, doesn't it? If Porto needs to go on a little wander forward, he can do. Hoop, we know he can do, and ping it with his left. So yeah, I think probably the most comfortable of the three positions he could take up as in that back three was playing in the middle.
The open agenda point that we have, and we will have until the end of the season, is Thomas Cleverley. Will he be the Watford manager next year? I think we were at the point last week, actually. Kieran and the Brigadier were, Brigadier especially, were very much, he was going to, and he should be, because, you know, that thing of people knowing the club, he really does know the club. And that's a benefit in many cases, or you hope that will be a benefit for longevity as someone in that position. Mike, after yesterday's game, a continual undefeated run for Thomas. Are you thinking he is or should be or no chance of being the Watford manager next season?
The rest of the season, it's taking the obvious, the rest of the season is a job application, is a job interview for Tom Cleverley.
But at the moment, Jake, at the moment, Mike.
So I was at St Andrews. I thought Watford did incredibly well to win that game. Didn't play well. Got it done. I thought we were tremendous against Leeds. I thought that was the most invigorated I'd been by a Watford performance all season. I found it to be refreshing the way that Tom Cleverley set the side up. He'd unlocked them in terms of an attacking threat. They looked organised. They looked happy. They looked fun to watch. Similarly, to a less degree, against West Brom, I don't think they started the game particularly well at the Hawthorns, but grew into it. Two good goals, and looked, again, if you asked which is the side that's threatening the playoffs or the top of the table, you wouldn't have known which was which. And I think that is huge, huge credit to Tom Cleverley. I think he was potentially taken a little bit by surprise by Preston's approach on Saturday. I still can't get my head around it. I think it was a very, very peculiar approach by Preston, and I think that probably took Watford by surprise a little bit. So at the moment, I'm all for it. There's a lot of people. There's a couple of people. You know, my brother's mentioned it. So I started off there saying there's a lot of people. Then ultimately, it's my brother sending me a text. you don't want it to end badly for him, and that we can't help but look 12 months down the line and work on the basis that Watford head coach is going to be different to what it is now. And Jason, you've mentioned about how well respected he is around the club and how well loved he is by the supporters, and he knows the club. For those reasons, you don't want it to end in disaster. But young head coaches are all over the place now. They are the future of the, stating the obvious, but you know what I mean. They are the ones most closely linked to the football that is being played today. Now, Neil Warnock has retired, and he can do a job because he knows what buttons to press and he knows ultimately how football works. But if you're looking to be progressive and you're looking to, dare I say it, build something, and if you're looking to get the best out of the modern-day players, then having someone who is in touch at that level, someone who has played at a high level, is hugely beneficial. He's doing his badges. He wants the job, I'm sure of it. He wouldn't have hung around, I don't think, at Watford, was he not focused on wanting to develop as a coach. Watford is so chaotic that someone like Tom Cleverley simply doesn't need to carry on being there unless he really wants to be. So I think there's the hunger and desire on his part. I think there's a lot of boxes he ticks in terms of what he's done so far. And I'd love us to see us. I'd love to see us start the season with Tom, just because of how it would, you know, on vibes only, really. That's what I'm going on. But so much of football is that for me as a supporter. I'm not tactics and formations and the real intricacies of it. That's not really my thing. It's all about how it looks and feels. And so far, it looks like the players are interested in playing for Tom and playing in the way that they want him to. Because you don't go out and play the way that Ismail obviously asked them to for the 30 games previously, and then all of a sudden just go, oh, we'll play like we did against Leeds. That's under the instruction of the head coach, and he was able to make that happen. So there's a long way to go. There's some, and I was thinking about it yesterday, when that sun starts coming through and teams haven't got much to play for. We've got Sunderland and Middlesbrough who like nothing to play for. Sunny days, you get those absolutely bonkers results sometimes, you know, goals flying in left, right and centre, players on the beach, players playing with the handbrake off, yada, 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 all that sort of stuff. So he's got to negotiate those. I've got a sneaky suspicion that Gino Pozzo might prefer something else and might be looking for excuses to go for something else, perhaps someone that a particular agent might have a link to. I just cannot shake off that feeling that perhaps he would prefer someone else. So what I want Tom Cleverley to do is to make it impossible for Gino Pozzo not to hire him. And I think he's doing a reasonable job so far. I think yesterday was the first little, not a stick in the spokes, but It wasn't a great performance from Watford and Preston. We've discussed why that was. So at the moment, I think he's in pole position. But how many games left? Four games left, I think.
Five.
Yeah.
And four weekends.
Great test coming up on Wednesday at Ipswich. We'll be licking their wounds after a damaging defeat to Norwich. Not only is it their local rivals, but in the race for the top two and indeed the title. We know what a good side they are. I think it's a fantastic opportunity for Tom Cleverley to really show what he can do on Wednesday night. All the pressure on Ipswich.
Yeah, these next couple of games are, as you said earlier on, Mike, this is our chance to play teams who have got something to play for and are playing for something. And that gives us maybe the opportunities because, you know, Hull, sort of, you know, they're 61, they're 10 ahead of us. They do have a chance. Southampton... pretty much in it, but they do need to keep the momentum going. They do need to keep winning because winning will make you win in the playoffs. And then also Ipswich, you know, there's three games there where they do really have something to play for, and that might give us those opportunities play in a way, to play against a team that aren't going to suffocate us, as it felt a little bit like Preston did. So we've got good. Jace, where are you? Tom in? Tom maybe?
I'm Tom in at the moment. As I said, I like the way we're playing football at the moment. I like that sort of balance of not wanting to give the ball away, but moving it, sort of looking for quick passes. I also like something I didn't mention. I see it quite a lot, and certainly yesterday, where there's a good understanding, sort of pass and move. A lot of times where we sort of, a runner's running with the ball, lays it off, and without thinking, the player then is playing the ball back into the space that runner is then running into. And that seemed to work really well. And it's quite nice when you see little things like that. I like that. I like that he's got them doing that. And it's just it's nice football to watch. Like we say, the problem seems to be with the players we've got rather than what the manager's asking them to do. Yeah. And has been for a long time. And so, there is a sort of some sort of positivity around the place when there has been a lot of negativity. So, yeah, I do want to see him stay.
Although, did anyone get a bit of PTSD when he made a double change on the hour mark?
Absolutely. But I think, you say the problems that we have, and if he has a pre-season, you think maybe that will be a good thing for him to do what he needs to do and wants to do and, set something up ready for next year. The one thing we haven't lastly, I think we need to talk about the agenda. I think the Gentry Day, how brilliant that is the Preston fans. I think it comes up to the 1970s. One of the managers said something like, Preston have got the best set of fans, or the poshest set of fans, and they are the Gentry. And I think what I love about it, because it's a great thing, because it's for all the, it's a sort of celebration of all the fans that are not here anymore. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, yeah. I think they were described as the gentry by a manager, and they've taken that on. And yeah, I think for about the last 15 years, I think it is what they've done. They've had a dedicated gentry day where they all wear their suits and bowler hats, and yeah, instead of it just being a sort of, yeah, they've used it as a tribute day, as a memorial to supporters that are no longer with us. And I think that's just magical. It's just a beautiful, simple tribute, taking hold of something, potentially a bit of a throwaway remark. I know it's important, but taking something linked to them and only them, and using it to create something that just is a little nod, and it gives Preston supporters an opportunity to think about, yeah, their loved ones and friends who will have gone before them. And there was a fantastic touch where Preston took a wreath and laid it at the grave of John Goodall, of course, who was Watford's first manager and was part of the Preston's Invincible team. So that lovely little link up there. And I think that link was firmly represented in the way Watford hosted Preston yesterday. I think Rich Walker was on the mic. He put his bowler hat on briefly to be a part of that. And I think that's important, that as a hosting football club, you show respect for the opposition when they're doing something which is so demonstrably great. You talked about John before the game being in the pub and talking to the guys, and we talked during the game and before and after, and you see that is, without a shadow of a doubt, that is what it's all about. Us talking about the game together, us walking to and from the game, being at the pub, planning the away, that is what it's all about. Doing it with people you care about, shared experiences, whether it's family, friends, and friends you don't know yet. All those cliches, but it's so true. And I think yesterday's day from Preston, it just shows the real and true, genuine power of football, that they're able to create something really simple but incredibly heartwarming and just a beautiful moment. One other thing that I want to give Watford credit for is the way that Watford have started reacting with the opposition mascots. And again, this may seem incredibly trivial, but they really give the opposition mascot a real big build-up and make sure that the away fans are listening and give him the opportunity, give the away mascot a chance to sort of say, come on then, what's the score going to be? And invariably they say the away team's going to win. The guy yesterday said, Watford 1, Preston 2. He really lent into it. And the away end went berserk. And then Harry the Hornet walks the mascot down in front of the away end, who are singing, and he's getting them going. And it just, it's absolutely beautiful. Yeah. It is such a stunning moment. That little lad will be on cloud nine today and going into school on Monday, telling all his mates, I was in front of, 2,200 PNE fans, giving it the big end. And they're all, I cannot describe how happy that made me. And I think that is what football is about. It's about those memories. It's about those moments. And it's about being a part of something that is bigger than just what happens on the pitch. And I think Preston showed that brilliantly. They were hugely grateful, I know, for the way that Watford hosted and got involved. And if you look on socials, all the Preston fans are loving how it just felt like a sort of a day that we all got involved with. And you talk about football family. We've all had experiences where the football family has stepped in to help and has been good for us and good for our clubs and so on and so forth. And I just thought that the whole feeling yesterday was wonderful, and it just shows what a powerful thing football can be when it's channeled correctly. So yeah, great to see that from Preston. It's a wonderful thing, and I hope they had a good day, and I hope that mascot enjoyed it. But it's a little thing from Watford that we do it.
It's great seeing Danny Graham as well. Yes. He's that sort of, for us and our podcast, he was the first year that we did it. He was so important to it. And a great start to being a podcast. And, this would be great, podcasting about seasons like this every single year. But he was there and remembering it. And he the fact he still got one of the vests. Incredible. From our Wear a Vest for Danny Day, that we sort of encourage people to wear a dedicated vest in that last game of the season in, 2010, 2011?
That was amazing. The amount of people. Well, the fact that he's kept it is great. I think it's evident that Watford still has a big part in Danny Graham's heart. And he obviously He obviously likes it, brought his whole family down, his kids were in Watford shirts and stuff yesterday. So that was nice. But from a selfish point of view, remembering that wear a vest for Danny Day, it was absolutely unbelievable. The amount of, for those of you who weren't listening at the start, effectively, when we knew Danny Graham was leaving, he used to take his shirt off and reveal her. Well, he initially did a, was it a ping pong champion when he
beat one for ping pong champion, but one for Get Well Soon, Stephen McGinn was the other.
That's
one.
That's right. That he did, yeah. Yeah. So he would often lift up his shirt to reveal a vest. So when we knew he was going, as a tribute to him, we said, right, let's try and organise wear a vest for Danny Day. And we thought, a couple of people might do it. We might see a few people turning up with vests. There were literally hundreds and upon hundreds of vests sort of dotted around the place. We'll try and I'll put a little slideshow together of some of the shots. I have shared it again recently, but now's a good time to do it. It was again a really good example of everyone coming together for something fun, just to say thank you to our striker. But yeah, what absolutely amazing. I'm still staggered to this day how many people went to the effort. We had people who weren't even at the game taking pictures of themselves in vests.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't make it. It was really, really magical. But yeah, nice to see Danny Graham yesterday. Nice to hear with the high regard in which he obviously holds Watford. It was good.
Yeah, important part of his development and the things he went on to afterwards, which were lovely. So thank you very much for listening. Well done for listening this month. I mean, I thought, what are we going to talk about? How are we going to talk about? We found nothing to talk about for just under an hour. So thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Cheers, lads.
And I think we're going to have a good old think about what we're going to do for our last four podcasts of the season. We'll figure it out. As Watford say, a slow farewell to this season. Who knows how it will pan out. But yeah, we'll be here all the way from the Rookery. So come on, you horns!